Bruce McGowan back with you as we continue our look back at the brilliant broadcasting career of the late, great Bill King, who passed away earlier today at the age of 78. Bill was truly a Renaissance man. He loved the opera, he loved ballet, loved Russian history. He really enjoyed traveling because whenever he went to New York or some of the bigger cities, he would prowl the museums. He was quite a good eater, as well as being a lover of fine culture, as he loved to go to the fine restaurants in each of the big cities that he visited. And he had friends wherever he went. And we had a chance to talk with Bill a little bit more in a more recent interview about his humble beginnings when he started off as a minor league broadcaster. And Bill talked with us about his 9 years in the minor leagues. People forget that Bill spent quite a few years in his early and mid-20s working as a broadcaster in small towns.
Well, I guess that 9 years, I guess that's what they call paying your dues. Matter of fact, when I was doing the games in Peoria in the early 50s, I saw Roger Maris playing for Keokuk.
Wow.
And one of our outfielders at Quincy, Illinois, I think it was in 1950, was a guy we called Relly Herzog. Actually, it was Whitey Herzog later. At that time, they didn't call him Whitey, and his name was Relly because his first name was Dorrell, D-O-R-R-E-L-L, and that was the natural derivative for a nickname.
What was it like broadcasting minor league baseball in those days? Because people talk about the 1950s as sort of the beginning of the golden era of baseball.
Well, I guess the unique aspect of, well, first of all, you do everything. You don't have a guy with you. You go to the ballpark, you do the pregame interview on tape, then go up to the booth, and you do all 9 innings. You do all the commercials between innings, the scoreboard reports, everything. And it was wonderful. I loved it. And there's nothing that could have replaced it. But the unique part of it, of course, was that we did not travel. So we did all Western Union recreations.
Wow. Now, that's involving sitting in a studio, getting the bare bones information. And did you use sound effects as well?
Some. We didn't use the crack of the bat. But it did depend on how good your engineer was. You could be very creative and very innovative. And if you had a thunderstorm or something or a rain delay, you could weave that through it. And, of course, in those days, people were not all that sophisticated. They didn't know that much about... People in Lincoln, Nebraska didn't know that much about Pueblo, Colorado or Sioux City, Iowa. And so you could run the train past the ballpark. Maybe there wasn't really a railroad there. And then, of course, if your wire service gave out and you had a gap, suddenly you had to find delaying tactics until you got the service back in. So you could do anything because nobody was there covering the game and writing the story back to your paper. So you could have a prolonged argument. You could have a rain delay. You could do anything imaginable just to fill that time and try to make it realistic.
Now, you always struck me as somebody who had just an innate curiosity for many things. And I would think having a taste of the travel that you had during your time in the service where you went to the South Seas sort of gave you a little bit of a flavor of, you know, wanting to get out and see more of the world. And then you took that leap of faith. We talked about this earlier. Came out to the West Coast to see if you could get yourself a job out here. And this was in the late 50s, right?
Well, it was in 1958. And I came out because for 2 or 3 years I had, in my own evaluation, and I think I was fairly objective, considered that I was ready to make the jump to a major league situation. And at that time, of course, communications were not as sophisticated as today, but you'd send tapes, you might make phone calls. But all the jobs that I applied for, it seemed, always went to somebody who was A, fairly well-known, if not well-known, or B, on the scene where they could kind of work the territory. And finally, I thought, enough of this. So we packed up and came west. It was a matter of which coast I was going to go to. And I decided on the West. Then I came out, made an exploratory trip to L.A. and San Francisco. I felt there was a far greater need in San Francisco, and I came here.
Now, you worked with Russ and Lon on the Giants broadcast for several years, didn't you?
Yeah, 4 years.
Wow. Now, what was that like?
Marvelous. I mean, it was great. When Lon had football conflicts, then I did his innings and did the pregame and postgame show that he did. And there was nothing like it. I mean, it's a perfect... apprentice situation, if you want to call it that.
Yeah. Any player that you ever saw, Bill, over the course of your time as a broadcaster that was any better overall than Willie Mays, or was he the best you ever saw?
No, he was the best, but Stan Musial was my man. I grew up in Illinois, halfway between Chicago and St. Louis. I saw Musial his rookie year at Wrigley Field in August that year. And I might just digress a little bit. I was like a lot of kids. I asked for autographs, but I was very reticent to be pushy. Mm-hmm. A lot of kids in Chicago were kind of pushy. They'd holler and so on, you know. And if you know Wrigley Field, the third base and first base are pretty close to the stands. I was down by the edge of the dugout, and he had taken his BP, and he was going, walked away from the cage, and as he walked on the first baseline near the coach's box, I hollered out to him. I said, "Stan," and he looked over, and I held out my autograph book. I said, "Would you sign?" And he said, "Give me a couple of minutes. I got to go to the outfield." He went to the outfield. He came back. He signed my book. And I never forgot that. And he was my favorite player, not only for that, but the way he came up, rocketing up from Class C to the majors in 1 year, and then coming up in September of 1941 and hitting .420 in 26 games, going on the next year, and immediately carving out part of a great career. The odd thing was, the first Giant pregame show I did, in Lon's absence during a football season, the Cardinals were in town at Seal Stadium. And I went to him, introduced myself, didn't tell him about that incident, but I asked him if he'd be on the pregame show with me. And he was very obliging. We did a nice show. And in my own mind, that was sort of a full circle closed.
A little bit of Bill King during a recent conversation we had with him back a couple of years ago at the Oakland Coliseum. Now let's listen to Bill in his early days with the San Francisco Giants as he's filling in for Lon Simmons on the last day of the regular season. The Giants needed a win. And Giant catcher Ed Bailey picks up a big hit to tie up a ball game that the Giants needed to win to force a playoff with the Dodgers.
Whitey Lockman, Wes Westrum, pacing up and down in the third and first base coaching lines, respectively. Crowd sitting in anticipation, waiting for some fireworks. The pitch. There's a swing and a long drive. That might be the fireworks. It's deep into right field. It is foul by inches. Full count with one out to Big Ed. Farrell into the motion. Here it is. There's a swing, another drive. Way back into right field. That one is going. It is gone for a home run.
And, of course, many remember Bill King as the voice most recently of the Oakland A's. And here's a call that he had, perhaps one of the more memorable calls in the history of baseball. It was at Dodger Stadium. Not a pleasant memory for the Oakland A's, but certainly one of the game's great signature moments. Kirk Gibson against Dennis Eckersley. And I think you'll enjoy Bill's call of an at-bat that was really, truly an epic one.
This is where he wants to get a decision. He doesn't want to go full and get Davis a fast man running. Here it is. Davis running anyway. Ball three. No throw as he steals second base. The pitch was away. Cassie acted as if he thought it were ball four, and he's talking to Harvey now. He looked around at Harvey. Maybe he thought he was hit. Let's see. Oh, Gibson was across the plate. Gibson was leaning out over the plate, blocking any avenue for Hasse to really get off a good throw and rather risk an errant heave. He didn't throw it, and he was telling Harvey he thought he was interfered with. Now it's 3-2 as Gibson has paddled back from two strikes. Oh, the moment is reaching excruciatingly dramatic proportions. The tying run at second. Doesn't take much to get him in. Gibson backs away. Eckersley started by getting ahead with two strikes. Eck has not thrown that slider. Swung on, drive, right field, deep, way back, gone! Gibson has won it with a home run into the right field pavilion, and the Dodgers have won the first game of the World Series. Gibson, graded by the entire Badger roster at home plate. The hobbled hero battling Eckersley to 3-2 and then launching a shot into the right field pavilion between the 360 and 370 marks. A devastating blow with the A's one strike from victory. And the Dodgers continue what Lasorda has been labeling the miracle performance. Gibson is mobbed and gets a big kiss from Lasorda. And the A's have been thrown a challenge here tonight. One that they have to come back to tomorrow and encounter Oral Hershiser. What an incredible finish at Dodger Stadium.
And a great call, certainly, by the great Bill King. And for another great call, let's go back to 1976. It's the Warriors coming off their NBA championship year, trying to repeat. They're playing the Philadelphia 76ers in a very tightly contested ballgame at the Oakland Coliseum. It's in January at midseason. Two great teams going at it. Final minutes of play.
41 to go. Philadelphia again with a new 24-second count. Mix on the left side. 6'7", 240-pounder. Bounced it in deep to McGinnis. He got a mismatch now with Dudley. Back out though to Carter for an 18-footer, and he's got it. Carter hitting. 2:28 to go. Carter in the ballgame now. Has 20. Smith with a dribble, and the Warriors down by two. Smith to the right to Barry. Barry looks for Dudley. Not quite open coming through. Now Barry to a dribble against Mix. Into the lane area. Feed out to Wilkes. Left corner, the jumper. Around it off. Almost went. Collins rebound. Now to McGinnis. Now there's a big possession. 2:09 to go, and they lead it. 91-89. Here's Mix on the right side now. Looks for McGinnis. Feeds him. He drops the ball, but Lee picks it up. Out to Carter. Carter, right side dribble. Goes by George Johnson and shoots over it. No good. Rebounded by Wilkes. Wilkes, long pass. George Johnson, early release. Makes the catch. Lays it in. Wilkes, an 85-foot pass over Mix. Right to George Johnson. Boy, that was on the money. 91-all. 1:40 to go. Carter, left side with a dribble. Carter holding. Crowded by Smith out front on the left side at 40 feet. Now to Lee. Top of the key back to Carter. Dribble drive. There's George. He goes around him. Throws it off the glass. George gets the rebound. Stolen. He's fouled. Back court. Carter and McGinnis double teaming. Who they call a foul on? They may have called it on Lee, who was in there. They did. George will get one and a penalty. 1:26 to go in a 91-91 game. United Airlines offering vacation packages all across your land, from Hawaii to the historic East. Call your travel agent or United. George's first one is good. 92-91. But still 1:26 to go. He makes the second one. I don't believe Philadelphia will call a timeout yet. It's up. It's hanging. It's no good. Lee rebound. Warrior lead only one. That makes it very precarious. Now up to McGinnis. McGinnis dribble on the left side. Works out front against Wilkes. Still dribbling. Very deliberate. Now 1:13. Smith intercepts to McGinnis. Pass. Dribble ride. McGinnis after him. Fouling him on the way to the basket. 3-2 for Phil. Carter and Lee are having a jawing match at each other. McGinnis tried to make the pass toward Lee. I think Carter got in the way of the passing lane. And that's why the ball deflected and Smith got it. Smith hits the first free throw and the Warriors lead 93-91. Second one is good. It's 94-91. And it's a timeout Philadelphia, but there's still a minute and eight to go. And the scoreboard showing Warriors 94, Philadelphia 91.
The excitement of Encore is resounding.
Still have two timeouts left. The Warriors have three, so nobody is short of timeouts here. Nobody has team fouls to use without penalty. 1:08 left to go in the ballgame. There's still a lot can happen. Don't forget, just a week ago tonight, Detroit led Seattle by 6 with 34 seconds to go, and they lost the game to Seattle in regulation. They were 8-0. All right, Dudley on Collins. Smith going to be on Carter. On comes the pass to McGinnis. Gives it back to Carter. Boy, Carter really made Clyde Lee mad a while ago. Bounce one to McGinnis up high. Looks deep. Double stack on the left. Dribble to the right. 15-foot jumper. Good! 58 seconds left to go. Now the Warriors have to have a score.
They lead it 94-93. Smith on the right. Addle's hollering, go to the basket, meaning that if you can get inside, you may draw a foul. Smith on the right, 15 seconds on the timer, 47 in the game. Smith, top of the key, all the way to the left. Carter hounding him. Smith turns, facing, feeds George Johnson high. Now to 7 seconds, now to Dudley. Dudley to the right to Wilkes. McGinnis makes a steal. McGinnis with a dribble drive. Dudley cuts him off, and McGinnis carries the ball. Oh, now with 34 seconds left, the Warriors have it. Dudley have a lead of one. There's a Warrior timeout on which we will keep it here. The right will inbound. Smith comes up high, takes the ball. Paddles along the sideline, hollering instructions almost at side court, center. Smith to the right to Barry. Barry against Mix, they clear the side. Timer shows 15. Barry holding. Smith goes through, not open. Barry holding. He still has a dribble if he wants it. 10 seconds. Bounce one deep. Wilkes falling down, and he's got a jump ball. Wilkes fell down as he collided with McGinnis, trying to take it deep on the baseline. He was fortunate with quite an effort to get the ball, and McGinnis just pounced on him to get the jump. 17 seconds to go. McGinnis, the powerhouse jumper, 6'8", much bigger than Wilkes. If they get it, they've got a chance to win. If the Warriors get it, they could sit on it. Here's the big one at the Warrior foul line. Dudley and Smith are out on the outside. Barry down deeper with Wilkes, or with George Johnson. Now ready for the tip. It's up. It's a draw. It's loose, and it's out of bounds. Off Mix. Up play, and it was hard to see from here. The ball went tipped forward toward the basket. Several pair of hands high touched it, including George Johnson, then Mix, then Barry. When it went out of bounds from here, it had all the appearances of being off Mix. But O'Donnell, who was right on top of it, said, no, it's a Philadelphia ball. They have called timeout. 14 seconds left. They can win the ball game. I feel almost helpless right now. That play with so many people really was not very visible. I'd love to have a replay on it. It was as tough a call as you could ask for it. Mike Marquardt, my technical director, makes a point that most of the protests come from the fans in other areas of the arena rather than right on the end line in front of the play, as if to perhaps indicate that O'Donnell saw the play very well. But now it's all up to Philadelphia. They've got what any club wants, a chance to win it. 94-93 Warriors, that jump ball could be the pivotal play of the ball game. 14 seconds left. They'll be setting it up now in that huddle. The Warriors, Phil Smith is already out. George is out there. Dudley is out. Battle's churning over here inside, undoubtedly. All right, it's... Warriors have no team fouls to use without penalty. Mix will make the inbound pass. Usually they'll use a guard. This way nobody can challenge it successfully with a big man. They've got Collins who goes so well without the ball with Dudley guarding him. Carter being guarded by Smith. Here will come the pass now. Nobody can get it. And he may have used too much time. He did. Wait, no. Timeout call. I misinterpreted Jake O'Donnell's signal. They had used, I think, 4 of the 5 seconds, and when Jake blew the whistle and pointed the other way, for a moment I thought he was indicating Warrior possession. Now remember, they have 5 seconds to get the ball inbounds. Comes to Lee, releasing out the center circle. Lee gives it up to McGinnis. Dribble drive, top of the key, into the lane, hang in the air, throw it off to Mix. Mix scores, but he travels. No basket. Philadelphia's going crazy. No basket. Mix called for traveling. Comes up beeping. He kicks the scorer's table. McGinnis penetrated, driving down the slot. Now, wait a minute. Addles is telling O'Donnell to get Shu back, that he should have a technical. Meantime, a raging argument around the official, Jones, who called the travel. McGinnis penetrated within 8 feet of the basket, went up and hung. Two men were drawn to him. He ducked it out to Mix, slicing from the left on the baseline. Mix laid it in with the left hand. The traveling violation, I thought, was called on Mix, but I'm not really certain. Nobody seems to be certain. That's one of the things they're asking Jones. Dudley Reddard inbound right side. Now the Warriors have to protect the ball. They bring in young Jerry Baskerville, who is very mobile, for Clyde Lee. Now the Philadelphians will be challenging the pass. Collins right at the sideline to challenge Dudley. Right side, face the basket. Dudley wings it over to Smith. He drops it out of bounds. I don't believe it. Smith down the right sideline, dropped the ball out of bounds. Philadelphia with no timeouts left. 7 seconds, they can still win it. Now to Collins. Collins midcourt to McGinnis. 4 seconds, McGinnis, 28-footer. No good. Rebound alive. It's over. The Warriors win by the very skin of their teeth. Oh, it's a lead ball. McGinnis with a jumper from way out on the right. It hit the back rim. It went high. There was still time. As George Johnson went up to rebound, he seemed to kind of tip it up two or three times to try to keep it alive and use up the time. And now, Gene Shue is going after Bill Jones. And O'Donnell is trying to separate them. Shue is livid.
Bill King with a call of a great finish of a Warrior game back in 1976. We're looking back at his career on KNBR 680, the sports leader.